helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichardt, National Director of CMDA Campus Ministries.
Christmas is coming. The snowflakes will be falling. It's the most wonderful time of year.
Hello, I'm Bill Reichardt, National Director for Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. We're coming to the end of our 2024 Student Pulse podcast season, and as an opportunity to remember the variety of interesting guests and fascinating discussions, we've curated several clips of those conversations from the past year. We hope these clips will whet your appetite and encourage you to do a deep dive into the full conversations that we've had with our guests, as well as sample many of the other 24 conversations we've had throughout the year. Thank you for being such a faithful listener or watcher to our podcast. If you have any ideas for a future podcast or subject, please reach out to our team at ccm@cmda.org. As we're always looking for guests and subjects that will both edify, encourage, and inspire our CMDA family. Also, would you, as a kind of a Christmas gift to us, please share with friends and colleagues our podcast and any of the episodes you really enjoyed. Also, please subscribe and follow us on your favorite podcast platform and our YouTube video channel. Again, enjoy these clips from the past year. And we look forward to many more great conversations that will inform and bless you in the year ahead. God bless. How do we find wise counsel? How do we know if it's wise? I mean, you had Job's friends. Job had his friends.
Right. Well, let me briefly tell the story, then I'll tell you what I think about it. This really came true for me when my wife and I were headed for the mission field. In Nigeria, not there yet, just getting there. And my wife became pregnant, became deathly ill. So ill that I thought we might lose her. So we did all the right medical things. And finally, we were advised that we should abort our child by a wise, good, caring physician. So we were in the hospital about to do that, knowing that it would destroy all my long-term targets. The night before the planned abortion, my father walked in the room. He's a Christian physician. And he said to me, he says, you know, after I tell you this, you may not think of me the way you thought of me before, but what you're doing is wrong. You're killing a child. And he left the room, and then we fell into each other's arms and swore we'd keep our baby, and that baby's now the mother of four of our grandchildren. The point is that I had counsel from experts, and I had counsel from a godly physician, and the one that counted was actually my father. How do you decide who's good counsel? Well, number one, you do want people that are knowledgeable, people that are expert in the decisions you have to make. But if they don't commit to our worldview and our understanding of the truth of life, if they don't know that life is eternal and that God is present and that our life is missional, then they can't possibly fit their knowledge of life into our decision-making process in a helpful way. Mm-hmm. I think, therefore, if we're seeking counsel, we look for experts. We look to someone who can understand, and they don't have to be Christian, although that's much better, but someone who can understand and accept that our life goals are valid. And then we seek more than one. We have accountability partners, and we work together and pray together in the fellowship of the church. And all of that counsel is what I'm talking about, not just a single expert that would have lost me my grandchildren.
Every son who is born, you shall cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive. Exodus 1:8-22. Okay, so Moses is on, this story is not about Moses, and it's not about Pharaoh. this story is about these two Ezer women that Moses wants to honor by bringing attention to all of Israel, how they were instrumental in preserving the nation. These two women were incredibly, incredibly courageous. And I call them courageous and pro-life Ezers. Mm. They literally are strong rescuers, right? They are strong rescuers of baby boys. So let's set the context here. We have this tyrannical, homicidal, infanticidal tyrant, Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh is a title, not a personal name, just like king is a title or emperor is a title. So Moses actually goes out of his way here. He intentionally does not name this Pharaoh because naming him would give him more significance. Moses is actually diminishing Pharaoh by not naming him. But he does name Shiphrah and Puah. He preserves these two women's identities for all time by including them in this incredible story. So, of course, first Pharaoh enslaves the children of Israel, right? So he's trying to kind of exterminate them, genocide here. And yet that backfires. So imagine for a minute what these two women would have thought and experienced when they are called into the throne room of Pharaoh. They have no reason to trust him and every reason to fear for their own lives. And he gives them a direct command. Now, it is sometimes challenging for us as 21st century Americans to fully appreciate the imbalance of power that's going on here. He is a dictator, he is a tyrant. He is significant, they are insignificant. He's actually considered a demigod in the Egyptian culture. And so he gives them this direct command to either strangle or to suffocate all the baby boys which are born. And make no mistake, opposition to life is always hatred of God. Opposition to life is always hatred of God. And so these two women courageously make a decision that they fear God more than they fear Pharaoh.
When you break the structure of objective reality,
yeah,
reality has a way of sort of breaking us back, right?
Right.
And so I give one example to your point that this leads to a lot of chaos. I give the example of, I think it was the MTV Music Awards. This was over 10 years ago now. And it was shocking. It made headlines. It was all the talk around the water cooler was that the performance of Madonna, Britney Spears, and Christina Aguilera, they sang this anthem to autonomy. That it was essentially a follow your heart tune. And to follow your heart, you need to spit in the face of traditional morality. And so part of what they did for the shock value was they all three of them kissed on stage at the MTV Music Awards, and it was supposed to ruffle everybody's feathers. And then at the very end of the song, they hold hands and they chant in unison, "We are tired of your outdated notion of right and wrong. We're tired," we're bored with your notion of right and wrong. And so there's this idea of, you know, it goes back to Friedrich Nietzsche, Jean-Paul Sartre, and then all the way back to Genesis 3 with the serpent, that traditional morality needs to be mocked, it needs to be transcended. Well, here's what's interesting. if Madonna, if Britney Spears, if Christina Aguilera, if somebody breaks into their mansion and, let's say, steals their jewelry or steals their platinum records, suddenly that outdated morality of thou shalt not steal becomes a lot less boring to them, mm-hmm. right? If they have a stalker who threatens their life, suddenly that old-fashioned morality, thou shalt not murder, becomes a lot less boring to them. Mm-hmm. If somebody, you know, plagiarizes their music, if somebody, you know, steals their body of work and turns it for a profit, all of a sudden that traditional morality becomes a lot more interesting. And so that's one of the problems with this follow your heart ideology is the idea that you can create your own moral reality. It's just nonsense when it comes to living daily life.
How are you sensing God's continual leading in this? What were some of the things that he impressed upon you that just you just couldn't shake it? This was God's calling.
It would be confirmation through either a person will text me randomly and say, hey, I have been praying and I've been thinking of you. And I want to let you know that God is not done with you yet.
Okay.
That the promises that he has done with you are not done yet. I will be having my devotional time, having reading the word of God, and I will be brought up to my favorite psalm, which is Psalm 139. Uh-huh. But then Psalm 138 is one of my favorite verses. It's like the anticipation to Psalm 139 says that the Lord will fulfill his purpose on me. Mm. Your steadfast love endures forever. Do not forsake the work of your hands. And I felt every time that I wanted to give up, that God was telling me, no, Michelle, I'm not done with you yet. And awesome. Now looking back, I can feel that God was leading me to this moment just because he, now a lot of my classmates who studied with me, who became doctors, they actually graduated. They have been moving to United States. And yes, they are doctors, but they don't know how is the process to get their certification valid over here in the United States.
Right. They have to go through their residency again, I believe, correct?
They have to do the boards.
Yeah.
They have to pass them, and then they have to apply for residency. Mm-hmm. And since I am in med school right now, I am the one who is telling them, you need to buy this book. You need to do this. Question banks, you need to persevere. There is one particular sister in Christ, which she texted me long time ago, and she say, she is in Egypt. And she was, Violeta, I have been thinking about giving up since I am also an immigrant. I am in another country. I don't know the language. But every time I want to give up, I think about you. And I think about how you haven't given up and how that passion that you have for medicine burns so much in your soul and is so contagious that I just can't give up. And I just want to let you know that you need to continue pushing because you don't know how many people are actually looking up and are actually inspired and encouraged by your persistence, your resilience, maybe a little bit stubborn, but we just want to know that we just want you to know that you are really impacting a lot of lives, even when you don't feel it.
And so I think C.S. Lewis talked about, you know, if we're not praying about that which matters to us, we may not be praying very much. And anxiety is an indicator of that. So I just like to say to people, learn to pray your anxieties rather than ruminate your anxieties. Mm-hmm. Learn to be as honest about what you're feeling and thinking in the presence of God as you can possibly do. Mm-hmm. Nothing you're feeling is a defect. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact. It's just what's happening. And God sees it and knows it. And what God longs for is a place of communion with us exactly where we find ourselves, including in those moments of profound anxiety. So that's what I've been learning, is learning to pray my anxieties rather than pray that God would remove my anxieties.
You also talk about, well, I guess this is tied in, the idea of petition and bring that situation to know before God that he is able to act on our behalf, that he is with us, he's near to us. And so ask, and then I think this speaks to the gratitude piece, is Thanksgiving. Gratitude, yeah, as you bring up, and then, be honest with God about those requests. I mean, God knows us better than we know ourselves. There's no sense playing that game with God of somehow, it may not sound polished or holy for me to ask this, but you know what? He knows our desires, and it's best to just be honest with him with those bold, audacious requests as they might be. And I think taking the anxiety to the Lord in prayer is about building, like you said, that communion with him, that relationship. And that's what he desires, right? He wants that intimacy, that relationship with his sons and his daughters.
He really does.
Well, again, I feel like we're doing a flyover view. Is there anything? let me give you this as a opportunity. You know, you can speak directly to these students. You know, in general terms, some of the things they go through, the stressors they perhaps have, as a shepherd, as one who works closely with individuals in the counseling and being a spiritual director. What would you say? How would you encourage our listeners right now, these students?
Yeah. Well, maybe I would say something similar to what I think Jesus says to us. And that is to say, one, when Jesus says, don't worry, I don't think what he's saying is you knock off all that worrying. That's wrong. Worry's a sin. Like, I just don't think that helps anybody. I think that makes more worry.
Yeah, we worry about our worries.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness. So I think what we've got to understand is that Jesus is coming to us with empathy.
Yes.
He sits on a throne of grace. That's the throne we approach when we're overwhelmed by our cares, overwhelmed by certain stressors that are in our lives. So when Jesus says, don't worry, it's more in the spirit of, I'd like to teach you how you could live free of worry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to. Actually, is worry helping you any? Is your situation better for the habits of worry that you've developed over the years?
Mm-hmm.
You might discover that you could still care a lot about unpleasant surprises, great stressors, mm-hmm. certain hardships, whatever. You could still care about those without worrying about those.
Mm-hmm.
And you could learn the practice. One of the metaphors I really like is, you know, if you've got a submarine down at the depths, there is an immense pressure pushing on that submarine. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't it get crushed? Because there is a pressure equal to or greater pushing from within.
Mm-hmm.
That's the invitation, I think. When we find ourselves in a vocational situation as the students we're talking to, but also just in our current cultural situation, there have not been very many more stressful seasons of my life in this year, the last couple of years. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You just, everywhere I look, something unpleasant, something mm-hmm. unpredictable, something that feels like it's never going to get better comes at me.
Mm-hmm.
Stress, pressure. What I'm learning is that I can learn to develop a sense of communion with God that pushes back against that.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, God, would you please fix everything so nothing stresses me? That's not the world I live in. It's not the world any of us live in. But Lord, would you be the one in me pushing back against those stressors and pressures that are there?
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is non-partisan and does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members. We'll